Welcome into another edition of the Bama Baseline Podcast. I'm James Fletcher with Luke Ratliff and Trevin Pierre-Noel. We got a lot to cover for you guys. Alabama with two more wins since we last spoke. We'll recap those for you. We'll get you ready for the games coming up this week. Going to have start the toughest six-game stretch of our season, really, right here on Wednesday. LSU on the road. That's going to be a big one. LSU just cracked the top 25, guys, and we got a lot to say about it.
Short vacation.
We'll also get you ready for Saturday's matchup against Arkansas and the return of the 1989-90 SEC championship team. They will be honored at that game. So we'll talk a little bit about that and our favorite players off of that roster, not named Robert Horry. We will also wrap things up with our top five Kobe moments in honor of him. He passed away yesterday, of course. The news, tragic to the whole basketball world. And we send out our condolences to his family, everyone involved. And it's going to be heavy hearts on the show today, guys. But there is a lot of good stuff going on in Alabama basketball. So we're going to talk about that here. I want to start off with the game at Vanderbilt Memorial Gymnasium.
You know,
loses.
It gets. I've been so many times. It gets worse every time I go. It's just it deteriorates. If it burnt down, and this is not me. No, I'm not advocating. In no way am I advocating for anyone to burn down Memorial Gymnasium.
Right.
But if it were to happen,
yeah, just on accident.
Just on accident, yeah. Right. And not by me, of course.
Of course, no.
I wouldn't be disappointed, no. It's a really dumb place. If you ever get a chance to go one time just to see how actually dumb it is. Let's talk about the game there.
Yeah.
The Tide won by 15.
Should have been 20.
It should have been like 40, man.
I mean, it really should have been. But for Alabama to still get a 15-point win.
In Memorial,
when they're kind of not
25
totally
turnovers.
On. Turnovers.
You turn the ball over 25 times and you still win by 15. That's pretty good.
But does that say more about Alabama or Vanderbilt
I was about to say.
Vandy's pretty terrible this game.
Like my buddy Hunter Johnson said that this is the worst team we've played since Auburn when Verez Ward was shaving points.
Ooh,
at the end of the games, yeah. Oof. This is the worst team we've – and that's true. They are that bad, man. They're that bad. And I sort of feel bad for them. And I think I mentioned this last time on the program. Because, you know, they had a pretty okay non-conference, right? Pretty okay from where they were, you know. And then, you know, Naismith gets hurt. Just sort of the same thing.
Back-to-back years.
Yeah, he had Garland last year. Got hurt.
Might start calling it the Vandy curse.
I mean, that's two first-round draft picks.
The Vandy curse.
Yeah. But they've lost, 25 SEC games in a row?
Indeed.
Is it more than that?
More now, because I think we pushed it to 25, I think.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Bravo for us.
I think their next loss beats the record.
Here's my thing. Anybody that plays in a gymnasium that bad deserves to lose 26 straight games in conference. They deserve it. And I hope they keep losing until they do something about it.
And look, I said going into this game, I said the only possible way they could come out with a victory is if Scottie Pippen Jr. turned into his father. Unfortunately, he fouled out before that could happen.
He got scared for a minute there.
Yeah, he had the 10 points. You know, maybe if they had Michael Jordan Jr. on the team, yeah,
Michael Jordan Jr. was not that good at basketball.
Michael Jordan Jr.
He rolled the bench at UCF.
It's a good topic here. I'm glad we went to it. If you took this,
right?
Okay, you take away Saban Lee, all right, who is obviously their best player. You take away Saban Lee.
I don't know about Dassault.
Breakout performance from him. This guy scored 21 points in 29 minutes of play. I don't know what to say about that. But this is a good topic. I'm glad we went there. If you took this Vanderbilt team, all right, and you put, 1991 Michael Jordan on it.
Yeah.
On this Vanderbilt team, how far would they go?
That's a good question.
Round of 32.
Round of 32.
Huh. I feel like that's pretty good. No, but because here's the thing. It's Michael Jeffrey Jordan. They're not losing a non-conference game. Just going to be honest with you. They're not losing a non-conference. In conference, they'll probably bat about 500 just because of how good the teams are in the SEC. They'll make the SEC tournament. They'll win three games. Then they get eliminated by a Kentucky or Alabama or a team that's just better than them. Like, you know, just a team that's just talented better than them.
Yeah, and I think that's as far as he'll ever get, Vanderbilt. Especially with this core. My God, they were bad.
It was terrible.
They are bad.
That was awful.
No, but I don't know about – you guys think they would get to the round of 32? I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Just on the will of Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Just to clear, are we saying we are replacing Saban Lee with him or he has Saban Lee alongside?
He has Saban Lee. We'll give him Saban Lee.
Let's repair.
Are you trying to make the tournament?
Here's the comparison I'm going to draw here. Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons – with Shaq Quarterman, who made it to the... He wasn't a good NBA player, but he made it to the NBA. With him, also on the rock, he couldn't even make the tournament.
Yeah, but Ben Simmons couldn't shoot.
Ben Simmons could shoot. Also,
Michael Jordan
could shoot in college.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We're talking about 1991.
Michael Jordan.
We're talking about either in the NBA Finals. Whoops. Switch hands layup midair.
I don't know if you watched Ben Simmons in college.
Bro, I did.
Bro, he looked like LeBron.
He was playing power forward. That team was mismanaged to begin with.
Exactly. His Johnny Jones
That's not Ben Simmons' fault. You put Ben Simmons in the right situation where he plays point guard instead of power forward for that team. You put some more size on the floor. Then, boom, there you go. All right? There you go. LSU could have made a nice run for it. That coach was incompetent. Okay? Let's just be clear about that. They didn't surround him with shooters. Okay? Let's just point that out as well. And they lost here at Alabama. Look, Ben Simmons just had a real terrible run, guys. Okay?
Just want to point that out. He had a difficult run.
Don't bring up Ben Simmons in this.
But we're talking about a team that hasn't won a conference matchup in almost 2 years now.
Okay? He's Michael Jordan.
He's Michael Jordan. James, use your head.
Michael's not going to settle for that.
Let's be more show centric here. All right.
Yes.
This Alabama team, you take one player that starts, all right, that started its last game.
Okay.
All right. And you replace him with Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Oh, that's a dub. That's a natty. That's no question.
Yeah,
if I replace Michael Jordan, say if I place John Petty with Michael Jordan, what John Petty is able to do, Michael Jordan could do tenfold. If you gave Michael Jordan the opportunities John Petty has in terms of just give him the ball, let him work, open shots. I mean, he'll shoot more mid-range than Nate Oates would like, but hey, he'll sink them sons, okay? We got a natty right there, and you got a guy you just throw the ball to, and he's just going to score whenever he wants. Oh, it's done. It's over with. It's over with.
I'm glad. This is a great conversation. I'm glad we're having it.
It's over with.
It is. But we're going to go ahead and move on.
Give me my daddy.
Not a lot to talk about in that game other than the concerns with the turnovers, which carried on over to the next game.
Well, you got to figure. I mean, this next game, this team was a really good defensive team.
Yeah, they led the nation in steals.
We're of course talking about the Kansas State Wildcats.
I've heard
from multiple people. Speculating, these are fans, of course. No, none of my sources have said such things, but fans speculating that the reason Alabama was at such a deficit on the offensive board, which of course Kansas State grabbed 22 offensive rebounds to Alabama's 3, was because they were scared of the fight that could ensue if they stopped the Kansas State Wildcats from grabbing the rebound.
I mean, there's evidence there. I mean, you saw what happened. you trying to have your team suspended? Just let them.
You know, that's sort of the thing, you know.
We got bigger fish to fry.
Well, exactly. You know, I don't blame. Alabama got manhandled on the boards in this game, and I don't really blame them because you don't want to get too physical inside with this Kansas State team. Because they might fight you.
Might.
There's a very good chance they'll break out in the fight, you know. But anyways, this past game against Kansas State, Kyra Lewis, man.
Well done.
Hey, mm-hmm. Good for him. I'm so happy.
We
so
talked
happy
about the revenge game.
Oh, this was the Kyra Lewis revenge game. Kyra, the Patriot Lewis, going to get Bruce Weber. He might as well have been the Drago from Rocky. might as well have been. But Kyra Lewis, what was it, 26 points?
Yep, 26. Seven rebounds.
Yep, seven rebounds, three assists, two steals, three blocks.
Alex Reese with three blocks also.
Alex Reese, this man's playing defense.
He is. The athleticism he has displayed in the last few weeks has been incredible.
Did something they give him an artificial hip or something? I don't know. He messed up his hip and all of a sudden he got more
bounce. He had the same surgery that Saban had.
Back he on played a round of golf afterwards. All right, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, and we had the Javian Davis injury, which carried over. He was not ready to go. I think that played a big factor on the boards. He tried to enter the game a couple of times, just really wasn't ready to go. He had a cast on the sideline. I thought it was odd that they even allowed him to check into the game with that cast while he was on the bench. Thought that was a little weird, but
I think this was just an important non-conference win for those guys to get. And so Javian was like, all right, bet. Let's go out there.
He gave it his best effort. He just could not. He just didn't have it. The contusion.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pain tolerance thing. And, you know,
well, it was good to see him back out there, though.
It was.
You know, it was good to see that he's, especially Oates. Oates had the confidence in him to go in and get a few quality minutes.
Yeah. And I want to talk about something real quick. Jaden Shackelford. His points are still about even average-wise from where they were, but his efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He went from shooting the ball every time he touched it, you know, 17, 18 shots a game to get to 15, 16 points, to this game where he shoots the ball six times, scores 11 points. And 11's a little low for him on this team, but to get that in six shots... That's great efficiency. That's what I want to see out of Jaden
Shackelford.
And I think
so, too. We talked about on the last show, he's playing a lot better defense.
He is.
You know, he came in basically, you know, started beginning of the year, basically. And he came in, first taste of college competition. The speed really got to him. He was having a hard time staying in front of his man on defense. And but you see now, he's come a long way. He's playing, like James said, he's playing a lot more efficient on the offensive end and being more of a more useful tool in the half court and on the offensive end of the court.
Yeah, James Shackelford went in high school, it was basically averaging 40 points a game in conference play. So coming into the SEC, coming into college basketball, it's kind of a culture shock. First and foremost, as a player, because you're used to being the man who just takes shots whenever he wants and then just going in just because you're better than everybody that's around you. And so he just had to learn to adjust to the game and realize, hey, there's actually some kids out here better than me just on pure ability. It comes down to being smarter than them and being smarter with the basketball and making sure that when I do have my shots, I make the most of them, but also trying not to force opportunities when I don't necessarily have to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Let's talk about this right quick. News came out today from the conference office. Today's Monday, of course. We're recording this on a Monday. Kyra Lewis, we talked about him a while ago. He averaged, 21.8 points this past week?
Conference Player of the Week.
Something like that. Conference Player of the Week.
There you go.
Good for him.
Round of applause.
We're all proud of him.
Round of applause.
You might as well go ahead and give him the Player of the Year, too, because he's having a phenomenal year.
He's having a great year, and he's cranking it up for conference play. I think he's going to have his best games ahead of him. He hits clutch shots. He doesn't hit a lot of threes, but the ones he hits are the needed threes.
Amen.
And that's what I love about him. We'll come back on the other side. We have a special guest for you guys. AJ Spurr will join the show, a good friend of ours, friend of the show, AJ Spurr, coming up next on the Bama Baseline Podcast.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Welcome back into the Bama Baseline Studios. We're in here. It's just chaos everywhere. It always is. There's papers everywhere. You know, James has got his stats. He's got something printed out over here. I don't know what's going on. But anyways, we'd like to bring in friend of the show. Our good friend AJ Spurr at what's your Twitter handle?
Spurr FM.
At Spurr FM. That's FM as in radio.
That is.
That's our Thank friend you. AJ Spurr. Welcome in.
Thank you.
Welcome in.
Glad to finally be a part of the podcast that I helped.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this. A lot of people don't know this. AJ actually helped get this podcast off the ground when me and Trevin first started last season.
He is the stepfather of this great podcast.
He is.
You can call it that. And I'm present. I'm here. I'm active.
The present stepfather. All right.
James, bring us in. What are we doing? What we got?
Well, we'd love to give a tribute here and get our top five going for the episode. And so we're going to start with AJ.
Mm-hmm.
Give us your top five Kobe Bryant moments.
Oh, that's wrong. No. We're doing 89-90 LM.
What are you talking? We mentioned this earlier.
That's our last segment.
Well, again.
This is wrong. This is wrong.
Do we need to come back to you?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
I've got a couple of Kobe moments. You're going to make me look so disrespectful. I was ready to talk about David Benoy being the head coach for the
Kyoto.
All the... It doesn't matter now. He got fired from the Kyoto Hanariz and the Japanese basketball.
We got a little joke going on here. Before AJ, we invited AJ on the show, and he texted, said, "Give me something to talk about. Give me your topic for the session, and I'll do a little research on it and help you out." And we gave him the topic of we're honoring this weekend at the Arkansas game the 1989-90 SEC championship team. A bunch of great names on that team. AJ's already looked them up. And we told AJ
we'll talk about it later.
We told AJ that's what we were talking about, and he came in ready, and we just hit him over the head with Kobe Bryant, who tragically passed away yesterday. AJ, your thoughts?
It's something where, you know, gone too soon, but it takes it to another level. I'm going to be honest. You know, when it comes to professional basketball, I'm a Heat fan. I never really paid too much attention to the Lakers.
It's hard to stay up that late on these.
It is. That's why I'm not a big Pac-12 fan for college football.
Well, they're terrible. Awesome.
That too. The whole Kobe thing, it didn't hit me as much as a, you know, cultural icon, you know, passing away, as much as it is somebody that's so universally loved. That's gone like that and out of nowhere. It really makes you think about your own, you know, being and just being appreciative of everything that's right in front of you, just the here and the now. And not only him, but his daughter that passed away in the crash alongside with him.
It's awful.
How old was she? 13?
13. She'll be 14 this year.
She had, I just watched an interview that Kobe did. I think it was with Kimmel.
Yes, it was with Kimmel.
Yeah. And they... You know, people would walk up to Kobe and say, "Man, you got to have a son. You need to have somebody to carry on this legacy." And his daughter would stand there and proudly say, "Well, you know, that's me. I'm going to be the next Bryant to carry on the name into professional basketball." And she had WNBA aspirations and everything like that. And, you know, it's certainly one of the more sadder things, if that's even a word. I can't even think straight, but... It's horrible.
It's one of those things, and, you know, I think Dan Lebatard said it best today on his show. He said it was just a reminder of the thudding finality of life and just how it can be gone like that. Especially, you know, and for me, we have a tendency as humans to dehumanize people. Mm-hmm. And it's not always in a bad sense. Like, with Kobe Bryant, we held Kobe Bryant higher than everyone else as a superhero. Because he was Kobe Bryant, we grew up with him. And every time in our generation, every time somebody shot a paper ball into a trash can, everybody said Kobe, right?
Yeah.
That's the type of cultural impact and how we just... It felt unreal. It felt like it couldn't happen because we held him to that high of a pedestal, rightly so, because he meant so much... In our society, he meant so much to a whole generation of people and just the sport in general.
Yeah, I think that for me, like AJ, I wasn't his biggest fan on the basketball court. I wasn't following every move he made and or anything like that. But to see the latter part of his career, to see the things he was doing after basketball,
he had it mapped out.
The great things he had planned as a businessman, as a father, as an ambassador to the game of basketball as a whole, not just the NBA, but for the WNBA, the things he was doing, the things he was working with his daughter on in youth basketball, all he did, not just within our culture, but on an international level, he spoke, I think it's 5 languages that he spoke fluently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That he would go around the globe to spread his message of work ethic and passion for what you do. And they talk, obviously you've heard everyone's Kobe stories over the last 24 hours plus now. And everyone tells you that he had one focus, and that was making sure that not only he, but you got the most out of whatever you were doing. If you came to him with some business venture, if you came to him with some idea that you wanted to pursue, he would check in on you and make sure that you were doing all the things necessary to fulfill that, and not just fulfill it, but make it the best it could be. And so it's tragic to see him pass away. Thoughts and prayers, obviously, with the other families as well. I know a very well-respected baseball coach also on the helicopter, and for the families, it's just a tragic situation.
So let's move on with the show here. Mm-hmm. Let's get everybody. Just give me one. Give me one. Give me your favorite Kobe Bryant moment. I'll start.
You just start.
I'll start. Right. And I think it's just recency, and you've seen it all around. I think all around the internet and social media the past couple of days. But I remember staying up late watching Kobe's last regular season game, in the Staples Center against the Utah Jazz.
Gordon Hayward was on that team. Yep. Rudy Gobert was out there.
He was. Rudy Gobert.
I think they still had Rubio at that time,
too. He scored 61 points. Yep. I remember it. I remember staying up in my room, standing up at the dresser where the TV was, watching it. That's going to stick with me forever. A lot more than that, obviously, with Kobe, but for me, that's what I remember most fondly.
Yeah, and I won't steal some of the bigger ones that I'm sure will be brought up, but for me, it was the first championship with Pau Gasol by his side. Pau Gasol, who came through Memphis, I had watched him
against the Magic.
The trade, of course, Pau Gasol for Marc Gasol. The perception of that trade, how it eventually panned out. But to see Pau Gasol get a championship alongside Kobe Bryant and the emotions that Kobe went through and Pau went through in that moment, for Pau to reach that moment for the first time and for Kobe to get back there after all that happened with Shaq, it was one of my favorite moments.
I hate to repeat already, even though we haven't even gone around once, but his final game. And it's not just a Kobe moment for me. It was... I have a really, really good relationship with my dad, and it's kind of all centered around sports, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, we've watched it all. And I know something is serious or, worth noting when my dad has to bring it up. And this was one of those times where he sat down with me and watched it and said, "This is going to be the last time you will get to see this guy play. You may not realize it right now, but,
this is important.
You're going to tell your kids about this one day." Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Michael Jordan moment for him growing up. And, he's right. And I know for sure, not only will I be telling my kids that I saw, a legend play in his final game live, but, that I remember where I was when this tragic incident happened. And I think we can all remember this is like Michael Jackson passing away. You remember where you were when he passed.
All right, so, as a Celtics fan, Kobe Bryant has been the thorn in my side playing the game of basketball since I remember watching the game of basketball. Kobe was one of the people that I love to hate. And ironically, my favorite moment of Kobe Bryant is when he beat my team in 2010. of all moments.
That was very humble of you.
No, I'm being serious. That's probably my favorite moment of Kobe Bryant because I was passionately angry at him in that moment. And I think that's the first time I was actually moved by a sporting event in my life. And he actually brought those emotions out of me and made me realize, dang, sports is not just something distant that I can that it's just on TV. It's just, no, it affects even the inner parts
of our lives every single day. Like, Kobe was an athlete, but frankly, he was an instrumental part of all of our childhoods growing up. You know, it's very sad that he died so soon, because as much as I didn't like Kobe the player, I was growing so much to love Kobe the person. You know, I would sit, like, after he retired, I said, all right, I'll start liking Kobe now. Started watching interviews, started, you know, doing research and just kind of understanding the mama mentality. And I was like, gosh, dang, if I had did this while he was playing, he might have made me like the Lakers. I'm just being honest with you. Absolutely. You know, and it's very tragic. Like you said, it's all too soon, and it was all of a sudden. And the thing that really struck me is that he did this exact thing basically every single day. Because he said that he takes helicopters to the Staples Center for practice because he wanted to spend time with his daughters. And so the very thing that he did to bring out time in his family is the very detriment to him. It makes it hit much more at home. That's something so casual that he's done a billion times is the one thing that...
The chilling irony of life, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's do a little momentum change here. AJ, what do you have on the 1989-90 SEC championship?
Back to Bama.
We'll start it off with my... He's made my top five barely. Darby Rich.
Darby Rich, now the strength and conditioning coach at Memphis.
Well, not his official title. That might be what he says to friends. Okay. However, he's actually the sports performance coach at A&M.
Oh.
And
yeah, he did leave Memphis for A&M.
Oh, he went back to A&M. Wait, hold on.
Is he at Memphis or A&M?
Hold on. No.
My source is
he is now at Memphis,
He was at Alabama last year when A&M came to play Alabama in January, January 12th. I remember it. Darby Rich was there. Darby Rich was a freshman.
Yes, he is now a part of the Memphis staff. That's correct.
Wait, I thought I had that right.
Darby Rich, a former basketball player at Alabama and a staff member on 9 NCAA tournament teams.
You're proud of yourself?
Yeah, I read. Either way, Darby Rich made the list. Maybe shouldn't have been on there.
What else you got for us? What do you have on Keith Askins?
He's basically
Alabama basketball great Keith Askins.
Keith Askins is hits close to home, mainly because who did he play for in the NBA?
Miami Heat.
The Miami Heat. Where am I from?
Miami.
The Miami Heat.
Right. He's from the Miami Heat.
Spawned from the Heat within the city of Miami. He retired with over 1,800 points, over 1,400 rebounds, but he stayed with the Heat organization. Mm-hmm. I think he's not still there. In 2013, he got promoted.
He works as a scout now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good for Keith.
Keith Askins, one of the Alabama basketball greats, really, throughout time. You look back, Keith Askins, I put him in the same category, you know, as, like, players that I remember.
But not
very perverse on that should be. like Reggie King, all-time leading scorer at the University of Alabama. I don't know much on Reggie King. Mm. That's the only thing. That's a detriment to me.
Here's a little cliff note on Keith Askins. His senior year, he didn't start a game for Wimp Sanderson's Alabama Crimson Tide. Still got drafted.
Went to Miami Heat.
What did he do to Wimp to make him be benched the entire season?
I don't think you want to ask that question.
That's a question I don't want to ask.
Maybe it was a Lou Williams situation. Because he did average 9.9.
Like a 2017-18 Herbert Jones situation.
Yes.
Yeah. For those who are looking for a recent analogy.
All right, let's get your third.
I've got Anthony Lawrence.
Anthony Lawrence.
Okay.
If you're a good friend of mine, you should know that I'm a huge G League freak.
Oh.
So for him being the first overall pick in the G League draft.
Hmm.
You know, I had to put him on.
You did know that
first man out.
You did know that Anthony Lawrence, did transfer after his freshman year from Alabama.
Yeah. Where did he go? Miami.
You're acting like I'm another just, Miami.
I'm just shaking it off here. All right.
Yeah. All right, number two.
Marcus Webb. Now, I'm bringing everybody back to Miami. What is Miami known for?
Beaches.
And?
Sun.
And?
Women.
The cultural diversity. Good job, Trevin. There we go. That's what I meant. I knew you were getting there. I just had to give you a little push. Now, do we know where Marcus Webb played? Trevin, you should know this.
He played 5 games for the Boston Celtics.
There we go. And after that, he took his talents to where he knew they would be utilized. Argentina.
Overseas, baby.
Oh, I don't know if it's overseas.
Underseas, baby.
Atlantis. Disconnected South and North America, but you can still probably drive there. We'll give it to
baby.
You. Underseas, he's in the Atlantis League.
This is quality cricket we've got here.
No, he played one season in Argentina for the Obras Sanitarias.
Well, Santorini
was the song.
That's that Cuban in him. He got that.
But finally, I mentioned this.
Again just to refresh everyone that's just now tuning in.
This is a podcast, Luke.
Just now tuning in.
I can't tune in halfway through.
If you're anything like me, you skip ahead. Just a refresher, we're honoring, the university's honoring 1989-90 SEC tournament team. At Coleman Coliseum this Saturday against Arkansas. AJ, give us your favorite player not named Robert Horry on that team.
I was earlier corrected on the pronunciation of David's name. David Benoit.
Yes.
That's my number one.
But it's a good number one. He's a great player.
He coached the Saitama Broncos in 2007 to 2008. Had one of their best finishes in a very long time. They finished 4th in the Eastern Conference. Next season didn't go as planned for the Saitama Broncos. They finished 5th, dropped down a little bit. He ended up taking his coaching abilities elsewhere to the Kyoto Henarees. And, you know, he actually didn't finish the season. He was fired before the season ended.
That's unfortunate.
So I'm looking at these win percentages, and it's cracking me up. I'm just even,
for his Japanese
league coaching? For all three, yes. Yeah, they're all terrible.
It gradually got worse.
He started at 47%, and it just got worse from there each season.
He went in his final season as a coach in the Japanese league, 42 games, 15 wins, 27 losses.
That's Luke Walton numbers right there.
there's not much on his legacy that he left in the Japanese league. I don't know if they still think of him highly. But
he played it. He was in the dunk contest.
Was he actually?
He placed 4th in the dunk contest in 1993.
As a coach or as a
player?
Oh, as a player.
Okay. I was just trying to put out a positive. Yes. We just ragged him.
Well, so let's. I kind of want to just, if we're gonna stick with David real quick, let's go through, if you have all of his teams that he's played on in his professional career.
I got it.
Unicaja Malaga.
AJ, of course, saying this from memory.
Yes, this is all. I'm making sure that you guys have it because I know the pronunciation is going to be a little difficult. And then, of course, 91 through 96 with the Jazz, 96 and 98 with the Nets, New Jersey ones that are.
If you notice that, right, they traded him when they wanted to get serious about championships.
He played one season in Orlando, and then this was his peak and my personal favorite point in his career. 98 through 99, Tel Aviv, part of the Maccabees.
Oh, yeah.
The Israeli league, I know people that have played in the Israeli league.
I know a couple people who have been
there. I know a man who's played in Israel before.
And then, of course.
Yeah, Brian Passing, color analyst.
Oh, yeah. Role.
Did he play?
Crimson Tide Sports Network, yes.
I didn't know that. I went to high school with somebody that plays. He currently plays in Israel.
Oh, nice.
Loves it there. Loves the views. Then went back to the States, played for the Jazz one more season. Mm-hmm. Then the Shanghai.
Just couldn't get enough.
No, he couldn't. He loved Utah so much, he left Israel to go back to Utah.
That's going to be a culture shock.
You went from, think about this, you went from Utah to New Jersey to Orlando to Israel, back to Utah, then to Shanghai, then Hitachi, the Sun Rockers, then back to Utah to play for the Snow. He loves Utah. I think we learned something about David Benoit tonight. And then he finished out his career playing-wise with Saitama Broncos, who he, of course, you know, as we all know, became their head coach.
Yes.
Was never player coach.
No, but
he doesn't get the Bill Russell.
But AJ, I have to ask you a question. What's here, up? And I know you're prepared to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect James Sanders to make an appearance this Saturday?
We had a big discussion about this.
We're ready. We are prepared to give him a standing ovation.
Really?
But we need to know if he's going to be in attendance. And we're hoping you some insight.
I'm going to answer your question with another question. And I feel like the three of you really do speak for the Alabama men's basketball fan base. Are you ready to forgive him and welcome him back into the Alabama community?
Nah, man, I'm good on that. I'm good on that right now.
James?
I'm good on that right now. I'm just going to be real.
I'm ready.
You're ready?
then Luke, you're the deciding
Luke
vote.
Trended,
Head of the Crimson Chaos.
You won't give him another shot at being a denizen of Tuscaloosa. he just wants to be reintegrated.
I don't think that's the thing to do right now, AJ. I think that's a recipe for disaster, if we're being honest with you. I think he's just going to go all downhill. You know, I'm not sure if he's a reformed man. I don't need to introduce him to more stimuli. You know, I'm good right now.
Let's bring this to a screeching halt.
Can I be honest?
Look here to decide.
Can I be 100% honest? I just had to Google Jim Sanders. I don't actually know. What? Can somebody fill me in?
No, we're not going to. We're going to leave it like that. James, take us out of here. Let's thank friend of the show, AJ Spur, for bringing his expertise.
My closing statement, I brought you all on. I can take you all off.
All right, AJ, thank you for coming.
I'm leaving after this year, so you can do whatever you want about that, AJ.
All right, this is the Bama Baseline Podcast. We'll
be
right back.
LinkedIn.
We'll be right back with a preview of the LSU game and the Arkansas game as well. This is the Bama Baseline Podcast.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to issue an apology for the last segment. I unfortunately confused James Sanders for another unidentified individual. I would like to apologize first and foremost. I'm sorry. My bad, guys.
I'd also like to apologize to the Benoit family for that last segment where David Benoit, Alabama great, AJ just went.
AJ,
all-star segment by him. I'd like to apologize to the Benoit family. But anyways, James, what we got up?
Well, we're going to talk about the upcoming games here. We've got LSU this Wednesday. That's a game on the road. It's the Trendon Watford revenge game.
That's when he comes here.
All right.
That's the preview for that game. This is just the game.
Guys, right. I won't say this. I think we're at the point in the season now, you reach there every season, where the next game up is the toughest game. And we're at that stretch of the season now where you got LSU, then Arkansas, then at Auburn. Am I right?
You got Arkansas, then you got Tennessee at home, then we go to Georgia. I think those two are...
Those are really tough games. Georgia, who's not doing very well
and
in
then,
conference play.
And then we have a really tough three-game stretch in actuality at Auburn, LSU at home. And just because we're coming off of that, I think the last game on that stretch will be tough with Texas A&M.
Absolutely. We're at that point in the season where it's, you know, you hear Coach Saban in football talk about next play, right? Focus on next play. We're at the point now where Coach Oates is still on his team, same thing, right? Because the next game up is the biggest game.
Yes.
And that's never been more true than this week with LSU on the road in Baton Rouge Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central and then Arkansas at 5 Saturday.
Hey, look, I'm happy with a split with LSU. I'm just going to be real about that. If we lose one, win one. If we split LSU, I'm going to be extremely happy. If we beat them twice, then throw me off the moon. I'm good. You know, LSU at LSU is a very tough game. Right now, the matchup predictor has them to win 76.7% chance to win. So basically one out of four times we'll win this game, basically according to ESPN. But we all know that they're wrong 80% of the time with their matchup predictors.
That's facts.
Blown into the legendary Pete Maravich Assembly Center. Couldn't even call it a real gymnasium. But, you know, I think Alabama's offense is going to travel on the road. They did a great job playing at Vandy with the worst sight lines in college basketball history. I think going into LSU with reasonable sight lines and a reasonable court, you know, I think they'll take advantage of that. I think the turnovers is going to be the biggest detriment. I don't know what happened. You know, recently after the Auburn game, all of a sudden we started turning the ball over again. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Nate Oates fixed that up, made him run for it.
Well, you got to figure. You got to figure.
Don't let our turnovers be our free throws.
Even though the Tide has had a rough two games handling the ball, they're still top three in the conference in turnovers per game. That's a fact.
Yeah,
exactly. Good retort, James.
I have no retort to that, but I think for Alabama, the key is to not let the momentum swing too far. Now, this LSU team, they're on a big win streak. They've been great.
They've been
since the turn of the calendar. But here's the thing: they're winning all these games by one, maybe two scores. The last time they won a game by more than 5 points was at Tennessee. And that was, early January.
Yeah.
That was January 4th. And so you go into this game and you attack and you keep this thing close. You fight to keep it within that 5-point range on either side. Mm-hmm. And I know that they've been great in those situations. They've stepped up. Trendon Watford has been a big part of that, by the way. He has been excellent down the stretch of games. But I like Kyra Lewis in clutch situations. Yeah. I really do. And so I feel confident in our ability to play with somebody. And I think it was good. Obviously, you wanted a bigger margin of victory against Kansas State, but Nate Oates actually pointed this out to the media. Alabama had not won a game within a 5-point margin yet until this season, until the Kansas State win. And so to have a close win under your belt, know you can pull out those close ones, I think that'll be big going into a game against a team that has lived on those close games.
Absolutely. And I said it a while ago, while James was talking, I said, they're just begging somebody to beat them, this LSU mm-hmm. team, as it feels like. Because, they were up, 16 points on Texas Saturday? One by two. In Austin, give it that. But they've they took Mississippi State to overtime. Or, no, they beat them at the buzzer. One Mississippi point. State yep. at the buzzer. They took whoever else they played.
A&M was
overtime. A&M to overtime.
A&M was four. Ole Miss was four. Florida was two.
They're really begging someone to beat them. And I'm going on record.
Say it.
Alabama's going to beat them.
Ooh.
That's a big prediction.
It's a big win for the Tide.
Hey, it would be. All I'm saying is LSU better win now because they're not winning here. That is a true statement.
You aren't
they,
wrong.
They are not winning. Show me a team that's going to win at Coleman this year, please.
Yeah, that's a big, big storyline.
Not named Penn and Kyra's two missed free throws. Show me a team that's going to win.
A big storyline in conference play, Alabama undefeated. And the schedule, it's as favorable as it can be in the SEC.
Absolutely.
With your home slate remaining. To get the Auburn one was huge because from that point on, what you got at home, it's LSU, Tennessee, Arkansas. Those are the toughest three mm-hmm. that you're going to face the rest of the way.
And then you've catch got, match with South Carolina.
You've got A&M, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt Duh. The rest of the way at home. So I think that if things are lining up, and if you win all your home games, that's a recipe to get into the tournament.
Well, and we talked about on the show before, previous episodes, those first four games in conference that Alabama had, you had Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Auburn. After that, you get a week. You get a pretty good week. You get Vanderbilt.
Mizzou.
And then K-State, who was struggling.
But a great warm-up game.
You get a great week and a half to figure out. You get to play out all the stuff that could go bad, like you've seen against Vanderbilt and K-State, where Alabama turned the ball over a pretty good bit. You get to play those out, feel up, and then go into this treacherous middle meat of the SEC schedule coming up, starting with LSU on Wednesday.
We got a tough February, gentlemen.
Yeah, I think it's a hard 6-game slate. Trevin, you called it a 7-game slate. You want to throw A&M, who, of course, didn't lay down against LSU, took them to overtime, so they're no team to just count as a win on the schedule.
Take for granted, yeah.
So, although they are without T.J. Starks, who's in the transfer portal, I know, Luke, you had some fun with him from the student section in recent years.
T.J. Starks, oh, man. T.J. Starks, he's a little talkative. You know, I respect it because he's a player that can back it up too.
Mm-hmm. He's not a pool
always
freak.
Always talk with huh?
He's not a pool.
Oh,
freak.
He's not. No, he's not. But always after Alabama plays Texas A&M and Coleman, always stay after talk to him. Good guy, good kid. Wish the best for him.
Yep. We'll touch quickly on Arkansas here. Arkansas coming to Coleman Coliseum. That'll be next Saturday. It'll be 90s night. Looking forward to that.
Looking forward to it. If you're a student and you're listening, get there early. Give them away T-shirts. Retro T-shirts has the old...
the 90s Alabama logo on it.
Gray shirts, 90s Alabama logo, mm-hmm. Block A with the elephant stepping through it. You know, it looks very majestic. And
that's my favorite logo we have.
I think we should use it more often than we do. We're giving those away. It's 90s night. You're honoring the 1989-90 SEC tournament team. At halftime, a lot of the greats we touched on earlier on that team. Thank you, AJ, again. But come out, man. Come out. If you're not there in time to get a T-shirt, wear your plaid, man.
Yeah.
Let's get some plaid palace vibes back up in here.
That'll be fun.
Will you bring the plaid jacket out of retirement?
I will not. It's happily retired. But I will say this. I'll leave it at this. I'm working on something.
Okay.
Ooh. And how about my preseason prediction? I had Arkansas as one of the top SEC teams. Eric Musselman making me look good so far.
Last year
I was dragging Arkansas's hopes on my back, trying to carry Daniel Gafford.
I was trying to tell him to let it go.
I was carrying Daniel Gafford and a freshman Isaiah Joe as far as I could. They didn't pan out, but this year I think this is the team I was looking for.
For those new to the show, James has been toting the mail. He has been the workhorse. He has been working hard to build the reputation of the Arkansas Razorbacks for about 2 years now.
Yeah. All right, you want to look at my top 25? They've been in it almost all every season. Almost all season, the Arkansas Razorbacks have been in it.
And rightly so, they're a great team. You talked about it, sophomore now, Isaiah Joe coming in, just really playing extremely well under Eric Musselman. And that's going to be a tough test. Like I said, man, every game, your next game is your toughest one here for the next 3-4 weeks.
Yep. And that'll wrap up our show for the day. I want to thank you guys for listening. This is the Bama Baseline Podcast. One more time, I'm James Fletcher.
I'm Trevin Fiona Will.
And I'm Luke Ratliff. We'll see you next time.